How are you today?
Wonderful. The sun is shining today, so who can complain?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Chad, I just want to say it's nice to see that you finally made it on the podcast and while you're not in San Francisco.
Yeah, change that background.
Okay,
I am over at my house. I'm cleaning it out right now. I'm trying to.
okay, well, we'll get started so we don't take up too much time. I just want to welcome everybody to the podcast. Today we're joined by and Aaron Burns and other family favorite, Greg Gamble, Chad Strong, who was here last time visiting from San Francisco, and a new one, first time I've got a chance to meet her at all, Jennifer Perkins. She's also one of the Glass City influencers, and we have a special guest, Clint McCormick, the Glass City Marathon race director. Clint, Jennifer, would you like to introduce yourself first, if you don't mind?
Sure. I'm Jennifer Perkins. I live in Clawson, Michigan, which is about 20 minutes outside of Detroit. Small community, 2 square miles, which I have run a million billion times. In training for my 10th Glass City, if you count 2020, it was my first full marathon. This year it will be my 10th, my first race as a 60-year-old, and I'm super stoked. This is my heart race, like I said, because it was my first marathon. So happy to be here. Happy to be an influencer again this year. This is my second time, and happy to spread the Glass City love.
And Clint, would you like to introduce yourself and maybe let us know a little bit of about being race director?
It's not as fun as you would think. It's more fun. Now, I'm actually intrigued to hear more about Jennifer because she's almost essentially gone along the journey with me, but this the other side of the line. So she gets to participate while I produce it all. So it's fascinating that we'll have some conversation here tonight to kind of see some of the changes that we've implemented and kind of what I think is going to happen and then what the participants actually realize on race day. So this is I think my 16th year producing the Glass City Marathon. I started back in 2008. The first running that I was in charge of was 2009. We've kind of gone through it all. We started as a small run, about 700 people. We've grown it up to a max field of 9,600. And I think we've kind of settled back into our numbers, kind of between 7,000 and 8,000 is kind of what we feel our numbers will look like. So we like to say that we are a kind of your big race field with your kind of your Midwestern small town hospitality. So that's kind of our goal of everything that we do. This year's edition will feature the 47th marathon, the 15th half marathon. So we kind of put a little more emphasis on the half marathon and the first 2,000 people to register for the half marathon gets a commemorative beanie cap. So there's still a few more spots of those. I think there's maybe 300 or 400 more spots in there for the half marathon. So keep pushing that. The marathon is about to sell out. We're less than 100 spots, and the marathon is totally sold out. So if you know anybody who's on the fence, kind of just waiting to see how their training is going, now is the time. So kind of get them to make the commitment before it's too late, and then they're going to say, "I wish I would have."
Yeah.
I think our only one that was on the fence, Chad, did you actually get signed up?
I sure did, buddy. I
All
am
right, there we
signed up for
go.
the fall. So,
Nice.
yeah.
Scott was here last time. I know he's doing the fooling, and I believe Chad is. And me, Aaron, and Greg are all signed up for the half.
All
So
right.
I've done the full there twice before. And well, it's third time I'll be running an event there. And my second year as an influencer. And
Right, we appreciate that. I'm happy to report that the course routes are all the same. So this is the first time in since I've been doing this that I didn't have to make a change to the courses. So, and usually it's not my fault. It's typically road construction forcing us to change the route here and there, but I'm happy to report that The marathon, half marathon courses are all the same. Now, I did choose to change the 5K course this year. Has anybody here run the 5K?
No.
No. Okay. So you wouldn't know the difference anyways.
Nope.
So effectively, what we're doing is we're going to be moving the 5K start line further east on Bancroft so that it uses the same start line that we use on Sunday. So one common start line, and then obviously the common finish in the stadium.
Okay.
So we were able to make some tweaks to that course. So most people probably won't even notice the difference, other than the start line will be more grand.
Actually, Greg and Aaron, this is their first time running an event there. They're coming
Wonderful.
from over here in the Youngstown area.
Boo. Yeah, absolutely. That was just only with the minimal amount of elbowing that I needed to prod myself into doing this, so.
Oh no. From what I can tell, there's a lot of room, I would say, and you get into pace rather quickly in this particular event. So there's not a whole lot of elbowing once you're at the race, just elbowing to get you to commit.
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting at. But
Right.
I'm there and looking forward to
Good.
it.
It's
Jennifer,
such a good race. It's such a good race. It's totally what you said, Clint. It's that it's one of the things that I always tell people. It's like, and it's such a good first full. It's big enough that you have really great court support. People are out there. Aid stations are great. Swag is great, but it's not so big that you're absolutely overwhelmed at the start line. I've done the free Detroit Free Press, and that's just, I mean, not dissing that at all. It's a fabulous race, but man, it's a lot of people. And if you're a
It's
newbie,
different.
it's different. Yeah. And it can be overwhelming.
Right. You know, I'm sad to say I've only done two marathons. So I've done Columbus and Chicago. And when I did Columbus, this was back in 2003. So this is a long time ago. This is when we still got cotton t-shirts. So I can't really compare to that, but I did Chicago in 2008. And that's just a you have to prepare yourself differently. You know, you have to plan, you know, to get to the start line early enough to get a spot in the corral, right? And then you have to figure out your plan of your meetup, you know, spot for your friends. And then you have to plan to, okay, where do we, how do, now where do I go? I finish the race and you start walking blocks and blocks and blocks. So I take that experience and try to figure out how do we create a festival environment, but without the stress, right? That's kind of, you know, I guess our easy way to say it.
Yeah, well, that'd be appreciated because
Right.
I can relate to a lot of what you're saying because I guess in some of those races that does become kind of one of those issues that you get that you face trying to figure out if people are going to meet where are we going to meet then once the race is over just trying to swim that sea of humanity to figure out how to catch up with those people that you came there with.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is something we started last year, and this helps you get to and from the hotels. So for those who came last year, did you guys use the Tartar Bus shuttle service?
I did not. We drove
I
down.
did
Okay.
not.
So we introduced this last year, and I can't remember the number of riders, but we if you stay at a hotel either on Secor Road, which is kind of the main corridor of hotels right outside campus, or downtown, there's three hotels downtown now. I have essentially our community bus service, it's called Tarta, has a shuttle route now. They'll pick you up from the hotel, bring you to the start line, and then shuttle you back from the finish line to your hotel. So I think we've mitigated a lot of the parking congestion and issues if you want to take a bus rather than riding with friends, so to speak.
That's
That's
great.
awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if it's on the website yet or not. If it's not, I will talk to Aaron and get it published. But I would suspect, from an influencer perspective, these might be some of the types of questions that it will start to pop up now as people are making their plans. Like, where should I stay for a hotel? Well, if you stay either downtown or on Secor, we have transportation figured out. If you stay somewhere else, you're on your own. So that's kind of one of the factors to figure out.
And if they want a hotel, they should probably get on it.
Yes. I suspect that this should be start to sell out now. People will be going a lot further out. I mean, like I say, anywhere you go in Toledo is 20 minutes. So it's not that far, but.
Yeah.
I think everybody in our group has already reserved a room.
Perfect.
Not everybody.
Not Chad.
Oh, he's asking.
I thought I was in there, but I got a notice actually on gotta count my days. I think I actually got it Monday, which they told me that there was some issue with me getting into that group block. So
okay,
I'm doing some more exploring now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I could talk all day about what we're doing on the event, but I want to ask some questions of you as a group, since I've got a group tonight. What kind of questions do you see popping up that we should be addressing? You know, whether it be pace groups, nutrition on the course, water stops, you know, anything like that. What types of questions are people starting to ask?
All those things.
Yeah.
I always wonder about how many water stops.
Yep. So there's a total of 19 water stops on the weekend, but I think that includes the 5K and the half marathon. So on the marathon, I want to safely say there's 15 water stops, at least 15 water stops on the marathon course. So ample is the answer. All of them have water and Gatorade. And then we add energy gel. And we have two dedicated stops for sure. I can follow up with everybody later this week. I'm actually working on the water stop sheets now. I just don't remember off the top of my head. But I know for sure there are two dedicated water stops. Mm-hmm. I want to say mile 16 and mile 18. Both of them serve honey stinger gel. So... we do that specifically for the marathon. I want to say I have another one that's, when I say dedicated, is they don't do water or Gatorade. It's just gels. This is purely a gel stop. Mm-hmm. But I want to say we do another one in Wildwood, and that would be mile, just after mile 11. And then you come back, and it's like mile 21. It's a double stop at Wildwood. I want to say we put gels there as well. So for the marathoner, you have four opportunities to pick up gels. The half marathon, I want to say we put it at mile 10, just after you turn off of the course for the marathon. Mm-hmm. So this is just off my recollection, but I can send everybody, I'll talk to Sarah this week and have her send some stuff out as well about the water stop locations and what each one is serving. And we can start talking about that as a group.
Yeah, that would be great. I saw a couple people asking, could they wear hydration packs or backpacks or whatever. Obviously, yeah, you can do what you want, but I would definitely say if you probably don't need it, because I think I stopped carrying anything. I think I have a little tiny water bottle just for Tailwind, but don't need it for water. Your water stations are awesome.
Yeah. I just had a friend of mine, she just ran Sarasota marathon last weekend, and she went to see her sister, and she's like, sister, my marathon's better than yours all day long. Your water stops are horrible. They ran out of water. People were not happy.
Oh, wow.
It was bad. And it was, you know, it's Florida weather right now, so 70 degrees, high humidity, right? And they ran out of water, not even close. And she's not a great runner, but she was top third of the field, and they were out of water for her. So just think about everybody who was behind her.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the things. I mean, we overstock our water stations with fluids. I'm happy to report we've never run out of water. There's been some times where we've miscalculated some cups. Those just got reused, you know, for some people, but you have to do what you have to do. So we've actually changed our formulas now of how we do water stop cups and water. I can't imagine being a 6-hour marathoner and you're out there, you absolutely need the water more than the 3 hour person, and there's nothing for you, you know? So we overcompensate intentionally. It's a lot of extra labor for us to do that, but I can't imagine running out of water. So,
plus, they deserve the same experience that everyone has.
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
regardless of whether they take it or not, it should be there for them. They paid the same amount of money. They should have the same exact experience. So I
Yep.
appreciate you doing that. That's
No,
awesome.
we preach that heavily. We actually just had one of our final medical meetings just this past week, and we're talking about shutdown times. And I just say it's you, so we pretty much put up a full triage hospital and everything on the tent or on the field. And it takes a couple hours to set it up and tear it down. So I just remind them, hey, when we're tearing down, it's not what people think is a no, it's not what people need, is what people think they have available to them. So if you're tearing it down before the course is closed, people will just assume that you're packing up and you're not given the same level of service, even if you have a full triage room still ready to go. So it's about optics as well. So I reinforce that to everybody. And you know, that's our title sponsor. So I mean, they should be telling me this rather than me telling me, but it's that important that I reiterate it, that even the field hospital we have at the finish line, it stays fully operational until course limit has expired.
I can
That's
only
awesome.
imagine that's much that has to be much appreciated, without a doubt.
I fear for the safety of the people at the back of the pack. They're out there for 6 hours or more. They need it more than the person at 3 hours, even though we've been there all day. I don't want to pack up and then, okay, guys, see you later. And then somebody comes through and something happens, right? So it's just some of the planning that has to go into it. And but on the same token, you know, a lot of these doctors, they've been there since 5 o'clock in the morning and they want to go home. So okay, how do we do a controlled tear down to allow us to pack up and be efficient but still be effective? So those are a lot of the conversations we have now. And we're in a very good spot operationally that a lot of our captains have been with me for a long time. They know the expectations and the setup now. Finally, we don't have to change anything on the course. So the setup on the course, a lot of the same thing. So this year's, you know, we're feeling very comfortable is probably good. That we have a good plan in place. It's rinse and repeat. We know how to deliver it, and now we just need to execute.
Knock on wood.
Exactly. So two things will change this, or three things. One will be rain. That changes operations quite a bit. Number two is 70 to 80 degrees because we're not used to it. So that changes our hydration philosophy and our medical response. Or if it's 32 degrees, you know, and wet and rain, that's now we're dealing with a lot of hypothermia situations. So again, mostly medical related kind of stuff. So those are things that concern me the most. But if it's a normal day, you know, it's a this time of year, it's a really good day. You know, 40 to 50 degrees, put that sunshine out there, it's just a comfortable day.
Clint, while you're talking about things that happen on the race course and how you respond, one of the questions that I wrote down for you today was about your most memorable race course disaster. So we've asked our Columbus race director, and he gave us a pretty good course fire that happened that none of us racers ever knew about. So I'm kind of interested to hear if you have one that really sticks out in your mind.
You said that was Columbus, you asked?
Yeah.
Serious.
So did he tell you about his finisher medals? They had to drive to California and back?
I think he did say something about that as well.
Yeah, that one's widely known for him. So we had one in 2010 that we got our water from our local supplier, and they're like, hey, you know, if you want water, we can sponsor the cups for you as well. So my crew went and picked up all the cups and all the water and everything like that, you know, in time. Sunday morning, we opened the trucks up and, you know, just to verify our inventory. And we found that the cups that we were given were cone cups for water coolers in the office.
Oh, ooh.
Oh no.
So this is 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. Race starts at 6:30. We have zero cups, right? So that's a disaster that people may have, when they were running through the water stops, going, why do we have solo cups, or why do we have these kind of whatever styrofoam, whatever it was, you know, but they don't really know the story behind it. So I basically just told my crew, I said, I don't really care. Just go to every 24-hour store, Myers, Kroger's, Walmart, whatever it is. Just buy whatever you have, and we'll just reimburse you after the fact, right? We don't have time to deal with who's got a credit card, right? So fortunately, they just cleaned out all the stores and bought every cup we could, and we're able to get on track and deliver the product.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Crisis averted.
So cone cups, always check you don't have cone cups.
I've been smashing the bottoms of them,
Oh,
just right on
gosh.
the table.
Yeah. That one, we remember that one every single year.
Oh, wow.
So it's one of those trust but verify moments. You're like, hey, did you pick out the cups? Yep. What kind of cups?
Good
Oh, that's
question,
exciting.
Aaron. Thank you.
Amy, do you have a question?
Sure. So you said you've been directing the race for quite a few years now. Overall, what would you say your favorite part of being a race director is, and your least favorite part of being a race director?
I mean, it's a very satisfying job. So the overall experience is very positive, kind of, and I'll say this, kind of maybe a two-part answer. One is the experience on race day and helping change people's lives, right? So we're all here talking tonight because of something that we created. And that's kind of the second piece of this is we took an event that was a local club run, for 33 years and turned it into kind of a national event now that it's on almost everybody's radar. And that's probably one of our most proudest kind of accomplishments, that we are able to create this event that changes people's lives. There's a lot of careers that people have that, you just go to work every single day and you make a widget or you do a service and it's just a job, right? It doesn't really change people's lives. And this is one that, it's a lot of work, but the output is much different than a typical job's output.
Awesome.
Oh, did you have
So,
another one, Amy? Go ahead.
the second part of that was, I know you said it's a lot of work, but is there
Yeah.
something that, that's super stressful about it, or just kind of a point where it gets to? Is it the night before the race? Is it some point months out
I
ahead?
would say it used to be. I'm a meticulous planner in that we now, I mean, the first couple of years, I was doing this as a part-time job, a hobby, and then I finally left my day job and created an event management company. And now this is my full-time job. But even when I created the event management company, it was just myself and like then another employee. So we finally got to the point now where I've got enough staff, we have enough people that are captains for this race, and enough contractors who've done it enough times that I don't worry about stuff anymore. I know and I trust the processes. So we've developed, good business plans, good processes, good communication, and I'm letting go now more and more every year so that I don't worry too much. But I mean, we have my goal is that on March 31st, we're ready to go. Everything is done. The timeline's good to go. Inventory is ready. And then in the last 2 or 3 weeks of April is community awareness, community impact stories, media kind of stuff, going out and having fun. Case in point is the week before the marathon, we go up to the big house and we operate their race, and that's a down week for us because it's just fun, right? No stress. And we just go and do that one for fun. Actually, it's a 10,000 person event with a 1,700 person waiting list, I found out today. So it's sold out in 2 weeks. So we'll go and work that one for fun and have a good time. And our marathon is the next weekend, and we're not worried about it because we know we got everything in place and ready to go.
That's great.
It took a lot of time to get there.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So moving forward, it sounds like you've got it kind of to where you want it. So moving forward, do you have any plans in the works for additions to the weekend or things like that that you're maybe looking to do in the future?
Yeah, I look at it every year, and somehow I want to add a mile, and I haven't quite figured out how. That's the one thing that I really would like to add is some type of mile event, just a 1 mile race, whether it be Friday night, Saturday, I'm not quite sure how or when, but I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Yeah, that might be how you get James up there. He's
yeah.
He likes that idea. Okay, there we go. He knows,
great, that's awesome. Any of you have any more questions for Clint?
I have one.
I do. Sorry.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
I just wondered, how did you get into this? What was your day job? And like, did someone say, hey, we need somebody to do this race. Are you interested? We hear you have great organizational skills. Or how did you get started?
Right. So truth be told, prior to this engagement, I had never directed a race. I was a longtime club member and essentially was voluntold to get involved. So
I have to use that term, voluntold.
Right? Yeah. But you know, I've been around running, I mean, almost my whole life. You know, I was working water stops when my dad was doing Ironmans in the 90s. So, I mean, you know, when I was 12 years old, I was running water stops by myself. So it just, a lot of it just kind of came easy to me. Now my background is, I have an undergrad in information systems and operations. I worked for a internet company for 16 years. I was their operations manager. And then I also have an MBA. So I took a lot of my operational education and my experience, kind of couple it with my hobby, and this thing happened.
That's like the ultimate goal, taking your education and your hobby and making it right into your life work.
Right.
That's goal achieved.
Right. Yeah. So that was the most difficult thing, was to explain that to my wife, that I want to quit my job with a nice salary to go do this running thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Where are you from originally?
Mostly here in Perrysburg, Ohio. I went to high school here. My dad was in the Navy, so we moved a lot, but this is kind of where we ended up. Actually, after I graduated high school, they left again, so they kind of left me behind. So they offered me to leave, but I was like, oh, I'm already out of high school. I'm starting college now. I'll just stay here and see you later, I guess. So, but actually they come back every year and they run the marathon. Both my parents do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do they get free entries?
Nope. No free rides.
And, no perks.
Right? It's one of those things, because it's a slippery slope, because I technically work for the club, the Toledo Road Runners, right? And just from a transparency perspective, that I'm not just mismanaging or showing favoritism or nepotism or anything like that, my parents pay their own way, and I can stand by that all day long.
I have one other question, if possible.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is ever possible again, but I really loved the magazine with all the advertising and just like the little articles about past runners and stuff. And I know in the last, well, since COVID, I think that everything's online. Would you ever go back to a print version? Because I got to tell you, sitting in the hotel room the night before perusing that thing was like my calming Zen moment before the race.
It was a large expense just to print it and produce it. That we can shift those dollars to a different area. Mm-hmm. But not only the cost, it was the waste. Because we have to print so many of them, we hand them out, and not everybody takes them. And then we're stuck with, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 extra programs, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it just goes straight in the dumpster. Yeah, I mean, there's no second life at all for these. Yeah. So as we got, you know, one area that we're really proud of is our sustainability efforts. So as we were starting to look at sustainability, most people think of sustainability of on race day. Well, let's just make sure we take the trash and put it in the right receptacles. But to really look at sustainability is to look at the supply chain and how we're bringing waste to the event and mitigate that. And that was one of the areas that, hey, we're bringing all this paper to the event that is not necessary. So let's just stop doing that altogether. So that was really the incentive to stop doing the book.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So
I'll still miss it.
Yes. I mean, it was nice, you're right, to sit down and just read it, but a lot newspapers don't exist anymore either. So
I know.
Us old folk will have to get over that.
Yeah.
I get a sensing Jennifer likes keepsakes, and I can only imagine that became a big part of it too.
Yeah, and I did, and I don't even read a Kindle, you know, like I like a book. So not to go into my personal thing, but I get it. I'm about sustainability, and I like that you're thinking of that. It should be a thing.
Right. So one thing we did do in 2020 that we maintain a little bit is we did a 2021. We didn't do 2020. So 2021, we did the box for all participants, right? So everything was prepackaged in a box. It was a keepsake box. So we did that the first year. It took us a week to stuff all those boxes with the shirts and mugs and everything. And it was a lot of man hours, volunteer hours. I mean, I think we spent 3 days, 2 weeks, so 6 days stuffing those boxes, because we had to fold the boxes, label them, stuff them, package them all up, palletize them. It was an operation. But out of that, the feedback, like, wow, this is a really cool box. So we do this now for the first time marathoners. So if you're a first time marathoner, you will get this keepsake box that has your name on it and the event and the date and all the stuff. So that's, you know, kind of a thing that we maintained, that while we were looking at, man, this is a lot of waste, a lot of man hours, all these other things, but there's high value in it. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's a low run. I'm only doing 350 of them. So if I do have waste, I'm wasting 10 or 15 boxes. It's not a big waste, right? So we are keeping that keepsake kind of thing going. And that was a direct result of our COVID procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, you had a question.
Oh, yeah. So your marathon brings Boston qualifiers. So how far and wide is the reach of this marathon? So like is there like crazy distance from other countries or like Hawaii or Alaska or?
Yeah. Like, well, far? Let me get you some real data. So if I disappear, I'm still here, but I can pull up some real data. Typically it's 40 plus states and multiple countries every year. So let me see right now if I can quickly find how far we are reaching this year. So right now we're sitting at about almost 4,000 total participants. So we're halfway there. Our highest, this is interesting, our highest age demographic right now is 30 to 39. That's 26.4%. But 40 to 49 is really like 50 people behind them at 25.3. So between ages 30 and 50, that's kind of the sweet spot in terms of ages. Gender breakdown right now, females at 49, males at 51. All right, so let me now find where my states are. Okay, so by country, we have a lot in Canada. They travel very well. We have one from the UK. We have one from Hong Kong, one from Kenya, Puerto Rico. We have one from Slovenia.
Hmm.
Here's one I've never heard of. United States Minor Outlying Islands is what they're registered as.
Okay.
Okay, so those are the countries. And then from a state's perspective, let's see what we got, if I can count these quickly. 33. There is an Alaska, that's 34. 41 states right now, and that includes Alaska. I don't think I saw Hawaii, though. No Hawaii yet. So it's about, I would say about average.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
All right. So besides the unpredictability of the weather, what's the course temperature and weather typically like?
Typically, we start with the low 40s. It warms up to about mid upper 50s. I would say that's average. The wind comes out of two directions. It comes out of the southwest and it comes out of the north. When it comes out of the southwest, it pushes you home. It's really kind of a nice push all the way home. And it warms the day up. When it comes out of the north, that's when I don't like it, because it comes off of the lake and it's chilly.
Yeah.
So wind direction is huge on that day, because, again, on your way home, you're running west to east to come your last 4 or 5 miles. So when you get that nice little southerly breeze behind you, it kind of just pushes it all the way home. But when it's that northerly wind and, you know, with precip, you're just looking at your feet for 5 miles and this race sucks.
So how does this compare? You know, people compare courses, like it's the 10th fastest course. That's a Boston qualifier or whatever. How does this one?
So there's two reports out there. One is just a straight numbers game, and that's Marathon Guide. Okay. We are the 13th fastest by percentage in the country. Okay. So, and I think that includes Boston. So, and then there's another one that we put on our website, might be called Find a Marathon. And that's relatively new. And this one has different factors. So it factors in like the hotel stays and the cost and all these other things in addition to the fast course and percentages. That one, we are 10th fastest in the country. If you remove net elevation down, we're the third fastest.
Oh. Huh.
So this, I guess it depends on what kind of data junkie you are.
He wants to know just for pure speed. That's all.
Right? Yeah.
If we're comparing it to Columbus, I think it's slightly, it's a little flatter than Columbus.
So. I would say it's flatter than Columbus, yes.
Huh.
Jed, that's
Columbus has some sneaky hills.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, what kind of a general layout of the course? Like, the first 3 miles are downhill, and then the next five, you know, what's, give us that little.
Yeah. So your first 3 miles is actually a loop back to the start line. And the elevation distance is probably 13 feet. Okay. So it's not that much. Then you get into a small community, very nice, called Ottawa Hills, one of the most well off communities in the area. But the name of it is Ottawa Hills. Therefore, there are a couple of hills in it. Now, they're not hills to what you can, like when I go out to Kansas City, those are hills.
Yeah,
right. These are inclines the way I like it. But you're gonna have a slight incline. Actually, you're gonna start off with a slight decline. You'll be going after mile five. You'll come down a little bit, come right back up. So that's real slight for half a mile total distance. Not very far at all. Your next incline and decline is gonna be mile eight. That one's gonna be more noticeable. You come back around. Once you hit mile 10, you're flat. All the way to, I mean, it's flat relatively till 20, no, maybe 19. I mean, if you look at the map, you can see there's a slight, it'll be going up and then coming back down, but it's so small. I mean, the grade change is not noticeable to the eye, but yeah, your first couple of miles, you're like, you know, mile four, then mile five, then mile eight, or whatever it is. You're like, what the heck? I thought there were no hills. Look, that's it. Then they're done.
But the houses are pretty, so it keeps your mind off of it.
Oh, absolutely, it is. And those sections, you're also doubled up with the half marathon runners. So the road is packed. There's a ton of people out there. The community supports it greatly. And these houses are estates. I mean, they're necks. It's a great area to run through. It's one of the secrets of the Toledo area that people just don't know exists.
Hmm.
So I think you can get through that pretty easily, though.
Were there any changes? I know you said there's no changes on the course. Are there any other changes that people want to know about? Or?
If it's your first time, you won't notice it. If you came last year as your first time, we had our expo downtown.
Yeah.
We're moving the expo back to campus. So last year they just kind of revitalized this and spent a bunch of money redoing the convention center. So I kind of felt obligated that, hey, okay, let's, you know, showcase the new convention center. Now we're like, okay, been there, done that. Let's go back to campus now. So it was difficult on our operations team because I had a crew downtown. I had a crew back at campus and it was just hard to do stuff. So it taxed us a little bit. Now we'll be all back together the way we have been in the past.
Yeah, because I think I didn't realize you switched it when we made our hotel plans, but I don't think it's going to matter that much because I think we would have had to drive somewhere anyways.
Correct. Yeah. 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 I mean, either way, I mean, I think staying downtown gives you a better overall weekend experience if that's where you're staying. If you're coming and you're staying on Secor Road, I look at it this way. You're coming to the hotel, you're going to check in, you're going to the event, you're going to the hotel, and you're going home. The event itself is your weekend. But if you stay downtown, I think you have the opportunity to walk around a little bit, you know, see a little different atmosphere of a downtown area. And I think it adds more to the overall experience rather than just going to a hotel that's outside of a, you know, a Texas Roadhouse, you know, a typical any city USA. Hmm.
What's your favorite thing about the city itself? And what are like some of your like top things to do or see or eat in Toledo? Yeah.
It depends on if you're running the next day or not.
So we're running.
Yes. So I'd be careful on what I would recommend to eat then. It's the thing that's nice about this area, why I haven't left, quite honestly, is you can get anywhere in 20 minutes. So the traffic is really minimal compared to going to a quote unquote big city. And like every time I go somewhere and come back, you're like, wow, the traffic is just so nice here because anywhere you go is 20 minutes. That's probably the biggest advantage. Other things that they've spent a lot of money in the downtown area. I'm trying to think what in the end of April. I mean, you're gonna see a lot of it on the race course. That's kind of how we designed it. The metro parks are superb, but you're gonna be running through that. So that's nice. Campus is nice. I'm a two-time alum, so I try to give them as much love as I can. They got all my money. but downtown is just nice. The challenge is the Mud Hens are not playing, they're always away. So that's our minor league baseball team. That's always good. The Walleye, they might be. That's our minor league hockey team, and that's always good. So they're usually in the Kelly Cup. That's kind of the playoff time. So it depends on where they're playing somewhere in the country. On a rare occasion, they are home, but typically they're away. So they're kind of from a sporting event, the time of year that we are doesn't really lend itself to seeing any sports. But if you're downtown, it's a walkable downtown. I mean, it's probably a mile long, everything, mm-hmm. right? So you can walk the whole downtown, see the Huntington Center. You can see the Fifth Third Field, get to the waterfront and back, and you barely walk 2 miles. I mean, it's not that far at all. In terms of food, there's a lot of new places opening up. I've got three kids, so we don't get a whole lot. But we actually just went to a winery yesterday called Urban Pine Winery and Eatery, and that was pretty good. That's in Maumee. I would look for some local stuff. Well, I think we might put together a kind of a package. Here are some different places to go see. There's a family called Mancy's that owns a lot of restaurants. They have steak. They have a seafood one. They're going to be doing our post-race pizza this year. This is a major change. So Gino's Pizza has been our post-race sponsor for 14 years, I want to say. And we're shifting now to a different pizza company, mostly because they're on campus. And I don't have to worry about how do I get these pizza drivers through all the road closures to get the food on campus in time. And it's proven to be more difficult over the years. So this company called Stubborn Brothers, they opened up a pizza joint on campus a couple of years ago. And it's one of those flash fire pizza things. You stick it in an oven, pull it out in 6 minutes, you know, it's done. So they can produce higher quality pizzas faster. And now I just throw it in a golf cart and drive it across campus where the, you know, so operationally it's easier. So that's that family. So Stubborn Brothers, Mancy's Italian and Mancy's Steakhouse and Mancy's Seafood. That's probably the best local kind of food of all genres that you can get.
We're big pizza course, fans here in Youngstown, so
yeah,
we'll look forward to trying it.
Yeah, so it kind of depends on what you like. If you're staying downtown, at the top of the Renaissance is a restaurant called the Heights, I think it's called. That's really good food up there. that's a different experience. And you're on the top floor of the hotel, so then you can see the whole nightlife kind of stuff. That's really nice.
That might work.
Yeah.
I think most of us are staying there.
Are you at the Renaissance?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're staying at the Renaissance, just go upstairs to the Heights. And that's, I would just eat there. So that's a really cool venue.
I got to work on it. I was trying. Got a little bit
There's
more
still room.
Right? A little bit more to investigate.
Yeah.
Any unique things there? Because, well, Amy's not going to be there, but she led us to a giant teapot one time at a race.
Coffee pot.
I'm sorry, coffee pot.
Okay.
How could you forget, Bruce?
Sorry.
I mean, our art museum is very, I guess, well renowned. I'm not into art, but a lot of people are. And they've got a lot of really cool sculptures and stuff like that. So there's a thing right across from where you're staying. It's called the Ribbon. And they do ice skating. I don't know how long it's going to be open, though. But it's this new thing they just opened up last winter. And they have ice skating outside. But I suspect it'll probably be closed by then.
Yeah.
But that's a brand new metro park that they just spent a ton of money on right on the water. You'll see it from your hotel there, right across the bridge. I mean, you're right in the heart of it. Kind of staying down there.
Very good. Well, thank you for that information.
Sure. Or you could be like me and, you know, shower at 8 and bed by 9, put the kids to bed.
That's a possibility too.
Yeah.
Get the, we'll be going to eat. We found, maybe we shouldn't share this, but we found if we go like 3:30, 4 o'clock to eat, it just works out a whole much better and you beat a lot of the crowd.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can always snack later if you have to.
But. There you go. Right.
Greg or anyone else got any more questions for Clint while we're here? Chad?
No, I don't think I have any more.
Jennifer, do you have another one?
No, I'm good. This has been great.
Thank you. All right.
So my homework assignment then is to get you guys the water stop information just to verify whether what I said is true.
Uh-huh.
Anything else that I owe you? Oh, the shuttle bus information for Tarta. So I'll get you those two documents and then we can share those around to the rest of the influencers. Start putting that out, letting our participants know what to expect.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then from a promotions perspective, I mean, really the marathon's about sold out. So I would shift all your focus right now to either the half marathon or the relays. The relays is a fun one that we want to get that one sold out too. So we're doing 250 teams. I checked yesterday. We had 98 teams allocated, so we're about halfway, just under halfway. So those people don't usually start signing up for that until next week or two. I mean, it's late. James, I hear you want to do a relay.
A little birdie was whispering in my ear.
Yeah, touche.
We can get you a team. I can find you some people.
We just need three more people. So is it five person relay team?
Five person. That's a very common question I get. And I laugh every time I get it. And that's why we keep the name of it, five person relay. How many people do we need for a five person relay? Five people.
That's the reasonable question.
Not a trick question, guys.
Yes. But you can double dip, meaning actually you can triple dip. You can run the marathon. You can then, you can't triple, you can only double. You can either run the marathon or the half marathon and run the first leg of the relay.
Mm-hmm.
And then just
I've
keep
always
on
wanted
going.
To do that. That seems cool. Yeah.
It's very popular. And a lot of times it fills a void in a relay team who have four people. So that's something that's always fun to do.
Now you only need two more people. If you two do the relay, one of us will run the first segment.
That's true. Yeah. That is true.
I'll give it a try.
That's that extra medal.
Right?
He'll do the first segment. You guys can take off from there. Then you only need two more people. I bet we could find them.
Right? Oh, I'm sure we could.
I heard something else
that we want to start promoting probably in the month of March that we'll put out there is Rally Row. So since you guys are coming as a group, do you have any spouses or family coming with you to be your support team?
I know we got two. I don't know if anybody else. Dawn and my wife Maria are coming. Other than that, I don't know if we have that many other spectators. Okay.
So Rally Row is set up at mile 26, and you can set up a 10x10 tent and basically tailgate all morning long and cheer people on. Okay, so
that's fun.
Yeah, so that's something we've been building over the last couple of years. It started to take off really well until COVID hit, and I got to rebuild it again. You know, I got to check, but I think we have a DJ over there as well, just for Rally Row. We pretty much say, do it or bring a 10x10 tent, set up, eat, drink, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. But right next to Rally Row is what we call Relay Reunion. So this is where if you're running the last leg, your other four teammates will join you and you can run the last quarter mile to the finish line together.
Well, we have a few people doing the full Chad. Well, Scott's not here, and that's all coming in our group, and several of us doing the half. So that might be an idea of something to do so that we can all meet up after the race.
Exactly. So that's kind of the concept of Rally Row, is to, you know, keep people out there cheering on those 5 and 6 hour marathoners when most people just pack up and they got nothing left for them. So we're trying to create that environment. It's difficult to force it, but it's got to be somewhat organic. So we just create these opportunities to mm-hmm. keep it organic.
I like that. That's
pretty cool. Yeah, very cool. It's a great mm-hmm. idea.
All right. We'll let you all get going. I want to thank everybody for coming on. This is something we are going to do again next month. We're going to try to get everybody back together. You, Clint, if you'd like to join, I will let you know when we decide to do it. If you'd like to come back.
Yeah.
Jennifer, I know Aaron, Greg, Chad, we did it last month with Amy. She was leading the with questions for everybody. So we are doing that, and we'll probably do more of an update on our training and whatever else is going on at that time. Did anybody else get anything else they want to add on?
No, just a hearty thank you to Clint. I guess everything that we heard, I mean, immensely informative, and you've torn away a few of the unknowns that I was thinking in my head, you know, what's going to happen here, what's going to happen there.
So okay,
I
appreciate good.
That. Yeah.
Bring the questions. And I'll tease you with one. You can tee up for next time. How does gear check work? So we'll open next month with how does gear check work, and then you can share that information out in the month of March.
Yeah, well, I'll borrow the words of somebody else. Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah.
All right. Well, sounds good, guys. Good luck with your training. Stay injury free. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
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 All right.